violence into the valleys of the Seven Hills. A pestilential disease arose from the stagnation of the deluge, and so rapid was the contagion that 40 persons expired in an hour in the midst of a solemn procession which implored the mercy of heaven. A society in which marriage is encouraged and industry prevails soon repairs the accidental losses of pestilence and war. But as the far greater part of the Romans was condemned to hopeless indigence and celibacy, the depopulation was constant and visible, and the gloomy enthusiasts might expect the approaching failure of the human race. Yet the number of citizens still exceeded the measure of subsistence. Their precarious food was supplied from the harvests of Sicily or Egypt, and the frequent repetition of famine betrays the inattention of the emperor to a distant province. The edifices of Rome were exposed to the same ruin and decay. The mouldering fabrics were easily overthrown by inundations, tempests, and earthquakes, and the monks, who had occupied the most advantageous stations, exulted in their base triumph over the ruins of antiquity. It is commonly believed that Pope Gregory I attacked the temples and mutilated the statues of the city, that by the command of the barbarian the Palatine Library was reduced to ashes, and that the history of Livy was the peculiar mark of his absurd and mischievous fanaticism. The writings of Gregory himself reveal his implacable aversion to the monuments of classic genius, and he points his severest censure against the profane learning of a bishop who taught the art of grammar, studied the Latin poets, and pronounced to the same voice the praises of Jupiter and those of Christ. But the evidence of his destructive rage is doubtful and recent. The Temple of Peace or the Theatre of Marcellus have been demolished by the slow operation of ages, and a formal proscription would have multiplied the copies of Virgil and Livy in the countries which were not subject to the ecclesiastical dictator. Like Thebes or Babylon or Carthage, the name of Rome might have been erased from the earth if the city had not been animated by a vital principle which again restored her to honour and dominion. A vague tradition was embraced that two Jewish teachers, a tentmaker and a fisherman, had formerly been executed in the circus of Nero, and at the end of 500 years their genuine or fictitious relics were adored as the Palladium of Christian Rome. The pilgrims of the East and West resorted to the holy threshold, but the shrines of the apostles were guarded by miracles and invisible terrors, and it was not without fear that the pious Catholic approached the object of his worship. It was fatal to touch, it was dangerous to behold the bodies of the saints, and those who, from the purest motives, presumed to disturb the repose of the sanctuary were affrighted by visions or punished with sudden death. The unreasonable request of an empress who wished to deprive the Romans of their sacred treasure, the head of St. Paul, was rejected with the deepest abhorrence, and the Pope asserted, most probably with truth, that a linen which had been sanctified in the neighbourhood of his body, or the filings of his chain, which it was sometimes easy and sometimes impossible to obtain, possessed an equal degree of miraculous virtue. But the power as well as the virtue of the apostles resided with living energy in the breast of their successors, and the chair of St. Peter was filled under the reign of Maurice by the first and greatest of the name of Gregory. His grandfather Felix had himself been pope, and as the bishops were already bound by the law of celibacy, his consecration must have been preceded by the death of his wife. The parents of Gregory, Silvia and Gordian, were the noblest of the Senate and the most pious of the Church of Rome. His female relations were numbered among the saints and virgins, and his own figure, with those of his father and mother, were represented near 300 years in a family portrait, which he offered to the monastery of St. Andrew. The design and colouring of this picture afford an honourable testimony that the art of painting was cultivated by the Italians of the 6th century. But the most abject ideas must be entertained of their taste and learning, since the epistles of Gregory, his sermons and his dialogues, are the work of a man who was second in erudition to none of his contemporaries. His birth and abilities had raised him to the office of prefect of the city, and he enjoyed the merit of renouncing the pomp and vanities of this world. His